Hey everyone, and welcome to this deep dive. So you guys wanted to know more about turning wastewater into drinking water, huh? Well, you're in for a treat. We're gonna dive deep into potable reuse treatment trains, and we've got a fantastic source to guide us.
It's a great book.
It's called Potable Reuse Treatment Trains Throughout the World.
By Jarity and others.
That's right. Published back in 2013, this review really gets into the nitty-gritty of how communities are already making this happen.
Yeah, and what I love about it is it doesn't just talk theory.
Right.
It looks at like over 20 real-world treatment trains.
Yeah.
So we get to see like what's actually happening out there.
Absolutely. So think of this deep dive as your crash course on turning what was once waste into, well, a resource. But first, why is this even necessary? I mean, we've got rivers, lakes, reservoirs.
Well, you know, the global population keeps growing, and that means more people needing fresh water.
Right.
And the thing is, in a lot of places, that demand is just outpacing the supply.
Except
we're seeing water scarcity in arid regions, coastal communities, and even places where water sources are getting polluted or, like, degraded.
Okay, so it's not just about finding more water. It's about using what we already have more effectively.
Exactly.
So I guess that's where potable reuse enters the picture.
Exactly. Potable reuse is basically taking that wastewater that we used to just chuck away and treating it to the point where it's clean and safe enough to drink again.
Now, I've heard there are different approaches to this whole potable reuse thing.
Yeah, there are.
Like, what are the main ones?
So think of it as like a spectrum. On one side, you've got indirect potable reuse, IPR.
Or IPR.
Where that treated wastewater is released intentionally into the environment, like a groundwater aquifer or even a surface water body.
Right.
And they just let it mix around.
Okay.
Before it eventually gets drawn back up as drinking water.
So it's kind of like giving the water a chance to go through like a natural filtration process before it's used for drinking.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
So what's on the other end of the spectrum then?
So on the other side, we have direct potable reuse.
Okay.
DPR.
Yeah.
And this one's a little more, direct, I guess.
Okay.
With DPR, that highly treated wastewater is added straight to the drinking water supply or even the distribution system.
Oh, wow.
It basically bypasses that whole environmental buffer step.
I bet that's a little controversial. The idea of drinking water that, you know, was once wastewater, I feel like that might take some getting used to for people.
Oh, yeah, totally. There's definitely the psychological aspect to it.
Right.
But the science and the tech behind DPR are solid.
Okay.
Like the water produced by these systems, it meets and sometimes even exceeds drinking water standards.
Wow.
So it's about getting over that yuck factor and focusing on the facts.
So how do these treatment systems actually work?
Okay.
Like, take us on a tour of a typical treatment train. What's in it? What are the stops?
Yeah, totally. So picture it as like a series of steps, each one removing specific things, contaminants, and purifying the water. It usually kicks off with conventional wastewater treatment.
Okay.
So preliminary screening to take out the big stuff.
Right.
Primary clarification to settle the solids out.
Okay.
And then secondary biological treatment.
Secondary biological treatment. What is that?
So we're using microorganisms like bacteria to break down organic matter.
Wait, we're using bacteria to clean the water.
Exactly. They're like our tiny little sanitation workers.
That's cool.
Breaking down all that organic waste. And usually there's a tertiary treatment stage too.
Okay.
Filtration, disinfection, that kind of thing to polish it up even more.
Okay, so how effective is all of that? Like, can conventionally treated wastewater actually become drinkable?
In some cases, yeah. Like, even conventional systems can produce water that meets drinking water standards.
Wow. Really?
For real.
Yeah.
Take the Upper Occoquan Service Authority in Virginia.
Okay.
They use conventional treatment plus a few extra steps.
Like what?
Lime softening granular activated carbon filtration.
Yeah.
And they end up with water meeting those standards.
Wow. So it's not always about the high tech, huh? But what about those cases where, like, conventional treatment isn't enough? Is that when advanced treatment comes in?
You got it. Advanced treatment is all about taking it up a notch.
Okay.
Using extra processes to get even higher levels of purification.
Okay, so give me some examples. What kind of stuff is that?
So we're talking things like membrane filtration, MF, and UF.
Okay.
Those are basically super fine filters that can get rid of almost all pathogens and reduce organic matter.
Okay.
You got ozonation.
Right.
Powerful disinfection. And it also breaks down trace organic contaminants.
Okay.
Then there's biological activated carbon, BAC.
BAC.
Which further biodegrades organic matter.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got the big hitters.
Okay, hit me.
reverse osmosis, or RO.
Okay.
That removes salts and tons of other impurities.
Wow.
And then there's UVH2O2. It's a combo of ultraviolet light and hydrogen peroxide.
Okay.
To destroy, like, the really tough contaminants.
Okay.
Like NDMA.
NDMA. Okay.
Yeah.
That's quite the arsenal of treatment.
It is.
It sounds like advanced treatment really brings in the big guns, you know?
It does. Like the F. Wayne Hill Water Resources Center in Georgia, they use ultrafiltration, ozone, and biological activated carbon.
Wow.
They're treating their wastewater.
Mm-hmm.
And get this.
What?
Their effluent ends up flowing into Lake Lanier.
No way.
Which is Atlanta's main drinking water source.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. Really shows how we can, like, close that loop, you know?
Totally.
On the water cycle.
Yeah.
And turn wastewater into something valuable.
Absolutely. Even in those big urban areas.
That's amazing. All right. So we talked about conventional. We talked about advanced. What about that gold standard you mentioned earlier?
Yeah.
Full advanced treatment, or FAT.
Yeah.
What's that about?
So FAT is basically a specific combo of those advanced treatment steps.
Okay.
Microfiltration, reverse osmosis, and UVH2O2.
Oh, wow.
It's considered the most comprehensive approach.
I see.
For potable reuse.
Especially in places like California.
Yeah, they got the strict water quality regulations.
Right, right. But I imagine, like, going for that level of purification, that probably comes with a hefty price tag, right?
Yeah, you're right. FAT can be more expensive and energy intensive.
That sense.
But it's crazy effective at removing a wide range of contaminants.
Right.
So it's a top choice when you need that top tier water quality.
Yeah. Do you have an example?
Yeah, the Orange County Water District's groundwater replenishment system.
Okay.
That's a great example of FAT in action.
So we covered the main types of treatment trains, conventional, advanced, and full advanced treatment. But before we go any further, let's look at some real world examples of how these systems are being put into practice in different parts of the world. That's coming up right after. We're just going to keep going.
Let's do it. Now, before we jumped into all that, I thought it'd be cool to look at some real-world examples of this in action.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Let's see how this looks out in the wild.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, there's no one-size-fits-all approach, right?
Of course.
Different communities are, like, coming up with different solutions based on their specific needs and situations.
Okay, that makes sense. So paint me a picture here. What are some of the ways that communities are approaching this?
Well, sometimes it's not even intentional.
Really?
Yeah, remember we talked about indirect potable reuse, that IPR?
Right.
There are places where it's been happening for, like, ages without anyone even calling it reuse.
Wow.
Okay? Right. Like, think about the Mississippi River.
Okay, yeah.
It's getting treated wastewater from all these cities and towns along the way.
Right.
And downstream, those same cities and towns, a lot of them, they're drawing their drinking water from the river.
Wow, so it's kind of like accidental water recycling. Yeah.
Exactly, a natural form of it. But then you've got places where potable reuse is like a deliberate strategy.
Okay.
Where they're actively planning and designing systems to treat that wastewater and put it right back into their water supply.
Right, like intentionally.
Exactly. And the Las Vegas metropolitan area is a great example.
Oh, yeah. What are they doing?
So they discharge a good chunk of their treated wastewater into the Las Vegas Wash, which then flows into Lake Mead.
Oh, wow. Which is their main drinking water source.
Exactly.
Okay. That seems kind of, I don't know, risky. Yeah. Lake Mead is a huge reservoir. It provides water for so many people. Aren't there concerns about, like, the impact of all that wastewater on the water quality?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's why they've got those advanced treatment processes in place.
Okay.
Like, nutrient removal and stuff.
Okay.
To make sure that the water being discharged meets those high quality standards.
Yeah. Makes sense. You know, I remember reading about that huge algal bloom that happened in Lake Mead back in 2001. Was that connected to all the wastewater going in?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Wastewater nutrient loads, yeah, they played a part.
Okay.
But it wasn't the only factor.
What else was going on?
Like, reservoir levels were low. There was a lot of rainfall, and you've got runoff from the whole surrounding watershed, too.
All right, so it's like a whole web of things.
It is. It's complex.
Yeah, and it highlights that, like, you can't just isolate these systems. You have to think about the whole ecosystem.
For sure.
But what about public health? Like, were there any negative impacts from that algal bloom?
Luckily, no. No direct health impacts from that particular bloom.
Okay, that's good.
But it definitely raised some eyebrows about certain types of algae that can produce toxins.
Yeah, I can see that.
It could be a risk to human health.
Yeah, especially with drinking water, you got to be extra careful.
Mm.
You know, speaking of public health, the Jarity Review also mentioned an outbreak of cryptosporidiosis in Las Vegas back in 94. Was that related to potable reuse at all?
You know, they never actually figured out the source of that outbreak,
Oh,
but
wow.
it did underline how important those robust treatment and disinfection processes are,
Right.
especially when you're talking about getting rid of those nasty pathogens that can make people sick.
Yeah. It seems like these potable reuse projects are always like changing and adapting based on what we learn and the science. It's not just a set it and forget it kind of thing.
Exactly. It's constantly evolving, and that's what makes it so cool. We're always learning, refining our approaches, and making these systems safer and more sustainable.
I like that. So we talked about unintentional reuse in the Mississippi River, intentional reuse in Las Vegas. What are some other ways that potable reuse is happening around the world?
Okay, let's hop over to California.
Okay.
They've been like leading the way in potable reuse. And one of the things they've been doing really well is soil aquifer treatment.
Soil aquifer treatment. What's that?
It's actually pretty neat. They take treated wastewater and intentionally recharge groundwater aquifers with it.
Okay.
And as the water filters down to the soil, it gets naturally filtered and purified.
So it's like using nature's power to help with the treatment process.
Bingo. And California's been doing this for a while.
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
like the Montebello Four Bay Groundwater Recharge Project.
Okay.
It's been running since 1962.
Wow, that's a long time.
And studies have shown that there's no negative health impacts from drinking the recharged water.
Wow, that's good to know. Decades of data backing it up. But what about places that can't do soil aquifer treatment? What other options are there?
Well, in those cases, they often turn to those more advanced treatment technologies,
Right.
like we discussed before, the high-tech systems with membrane filtration, ozonation, all that good stuff.
Gotcha. Can you give me some specific examples of those advanced treatment trains in action?
Yeah, sure. Remember the Upper Occoquan Service Authority in Virginia? They've been using an advanced treatment train for decades.
Oh.
Lime softening, granular activated carbon filtration, chlorination, the whole shebang.
Wow.
And they consistently meet those drinking water standards.
So even without that environmental buffer from soil aquifer treatment, they're getting that high quality water. That's really cool.
It is. And another good one is the F. Wayne Hill Water Resources Center in Gwinnett County, Georgia.
Okay.
They use ultrafiltration, ozone, and biological activated carbon to treat their wastewater.
And that goes into Lake Lanier,
All
right?
right.
Atlanta's drinking water source. That's quite a journey for that water.
It really is. And it shows how we can turn waste into a valuable resource, closing the loop on the water cycle.
I love that. So we've got unintentional reuse, intentional reuse with environmental buffers, advanced treatment trains, anything else pushing the boundaries of potable reuse?
Well, if you want to zoom out a bit, there's a growing interest in direct potable reuse.
Oh, yeah, DPR.
You got it. That's where you skip the environmental buffer altogether.
We talked about that earlier. You mentioned Windhoek, Namibia as a pioneer. They've been doing this for ages, right?
Since 1968, to be exact,
Oh.
their system uses a multi-barrier approach,
Okay.
multiple treatment steps, ozonation, biological activated carbon filtration, ultrafiltration, and chlorination,
Oh, wow.
all to produce top-notch drinking water straight from treated wastewater.
That's amazing. Are there any examples of DPR in the US?
Actually, yeah, there are a few popping up, like Cloudcroft, New Mexico.
Okay.
It's a small mountain community. They started a DPR system because they were running low on water.
Okay, so out of necessity.
Yeah, pretty much. Their system uses a membrane bioreactor, reverse osmosis, and UVH2O2 to treat the wastewater.
Okay.
Then they blend it with spring or well water.
So they're using those advanced treatments and then adding a blending step, right?
Right.
I guess that helps with water quality and also might ease those public perception concerns, right?
Exactly. You got it. And another example is Big Spring, Texas. They also implemented a DPR system using full advanced treatment. They blend the treated wastewater with another water source before sending it to a regular drinking water treatment plant.
Wow, that's cool. It's great to see these innovative approaches gaining traction.
It is.
Okay, so to recap, we've seen unintentional reuse, intentional reuse with those environmental buffers, advanced treatment trains, and even DPR. Potable reuse isn't some sci-fi concept. It's happening all over the world right now.
It really is. And it shows just how creative we can be when facing challenges. You
Yeah.
know, finding solutions to make sure everyone has the water they need.
It's amazing. It really is. You know, going through all this, it's clear to me that potable reuse is about so much more than just the tech involved.
You're so right. It's about shifting our whole perspective on water.
Oh,
like
wow.
Moving away from that old take it, use it, toss it mindset.
I like that. Help me understand, like, what do you mean by shifting our perspective on water?
It's all about going circular, you know. Instead of seeing wastewater as something to just get rid of, we can look at it as a valuable resource, a source of clean, safe drinking water if we treat it right. It's about closing that loop on the water cycle.
Okay, yeah, I get that. But let's be real. A lot of people are still going to be a little iffy about drinking water that was once, you know, wastewater. Is that just the yuck factor we talked about, or are there legitimate reasons to be cautious?
It's a bit of both, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, there's that initial E reaction, which makes sense, you know.
Right.
But the thing is, these treatment technologies, especially those advanced ones, they're really, really good at getting rid of contaminants.
Right.
Like, we're talking non-detectable levels.
Yeah, and the Jarity Review talked a lot about that multi-barrier approach that a lot of these systems use.
Right.
Like, it's multiple layers of protection, right, to make sure that the water is safe at the end of the process.
Exactly. It's like you got multiple treatment steps and safeguards in place to make sure that the final product is high quality.
Right. So it's not just one thing. It's a whole system.
It is. These systems are designed to be super robust, resilient even, and redundant too.
Redundant. What do you mean by that?
It means that they can handle like unexpected stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like fluctuations in the water quality.
Yeah.
Or even if some equipment fails.
Right.
They can still keep going. Still produce safe drinking water.
Okay, that makes me feel better. But even with all those safeguards, you still got to keep an eye on things, right? Make sure that the treated water actually meets all those drinking water standards.
Absolutely. You got to monitor constantly.
Okay.
Usually that involves testing for a ton of different stuff.
Yeah.
Chemicals, microbes, the whole nine yards. To make sure it's all good, you know?
Right, right. So basically like constant quality control.
Exactly. And I think that's an area where we're going to see some really cool developments in the future.
Oh, really? What kind of stuff are you thinking?
Well, imagine this. Real-time monitoring systems.
Okay.
They can detect, like, any weird stuff, any contamination, instantly. So you can react right away.
Yeah.
Make adjustments, fix any problems before they become big problems.
Right. That would be amazing. You know, one thing that stood out to me in the Jarity Review is this whole concept of product water stabilization.
Oh, yeah.
What is that all about?
That's a super important step. A lot of people forget about it.
Really?
But it's key. So after you put the water through those advanced treatment processes,
mm-hmm.
especially reverse osmosis,
okay,
you end up with water that's like super pure.
Right.
Like almost a distilled water.
Okay.
And while that sounds great, it can actually cause some issues in the distribution system.
Wait, really? I thought super pure water was a good thing. What's the problem?
Well, think of it this way. Pure water is like really thirsty for minerals.
Okay.
And if it can't find those minerals in the water itself,
mm-hmm.
it'll start pulling them from wherever it can. The mm-hmm. pipes, the infrastructure, all that.
Oh, I see.
And that can cause corrosion, which can damage the whole distribution system.
Right, right. So the pipes start falling apart.
Exactly. And then that can affect the quality of the water coming out of people's taps.
So it's not just about making the water pure. It's also about making sure it plays nice with the infrastructure.
Totally. It's like finding that Goldilocks zone. Not too pure, not too, you know.
Right.
Just right.
Right, right. So how do you do that? How do you stabilize the water?
That's where product water stabilization comes in.
Okay.
Basically, you adjust the chemistry of the water. Add back some of those minerals.
What kind of minerals?
Calcium, magnesium, stuff like that.
Okay.
It makes the water less corrosive so it doesn't mess with the pipes.
So you're kind of mimicking those naturally occurring minerals that you'd find in water.
Exactly. And it helps with the taste too. No one wants to drink water that tastes like metal or something.
Right? Right, even if it's technically pure. So it's like you're balancing purity, taste, and making sure it's compatible with the system.
Exactly. You got it.
Wow, this has been a really eye-opening deep dive. It's like engineering, chemistry, microbiology, public health.
Even psychology.
It's amazing. I feel like I have a much better understanding of how this all works.
I'm glad. I think the main thing for our listeners to remember is this. Potable reuse, it's not just some crazy idea anymore.
Right.
It's real, it works, and honestly, it's becoming more and more necessary,
mm-hmm.
you know. to make sure we have enough water for everyone.
Absolutely. And the Gerardy Review showed us that communities all over the world are already doing this successfully.
Uh-huh.
And learning from each other, coming up with new innovations. It's exciting stuff.
It is. And as technology keeps getting better and more people get on board with the idea,
yeah,
I think we're going to see even more amazing potable reuse systems popping up.
Which brings us to a really interesting question. What role is direct potable reuse going to play in the future?
Ooh, good one.
Like, could it become the standard?
That's a question we all need to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists, policymakers, the public.
Absolutely. It's a conversation we need to have. So keep exploring this topic, do your own research, and let us know what you think. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into potable reuse treatment trains. We'll see you next time.